Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lana. Welcome back to the 14th interview on Radio 314 featuring artist, musician, philosopher, and cosmologist Matt Presti. We're going to discuss the philosophical and scientific ideas of an American polymath by the name of Dr. Walter Russell, born in 1871. He is known as the man who tapped the secrets of the universe. Well, trick or treat, how are you, Matt?
I'm doing well, Lana. Thanks for inviting me onto your program.
Well, it's my pleasure. I hear there's been mass chemtrail spraying over the East Coast over the last week. Have you noticed anything?
I actually saw John Cale's video on the South Carolina chemtrail sky. It was more than dotted with chemtrails. It was just utterly disgusting to me to see all that garbage in the atmosphere. But Missouri is not immune to chemtrails. I wish it was, but really no place over the U.S. is immune. And you know, I often wonder what the purpose of it is, but it makes no sense. It's pretty nasty stuff, though.
Well, it's just interesting, too. Yeah, I saw Cale's video. He said that usually around Halloween, Charleston gets really sprayed. But it's just interesting because there was just a huge hurricane, Hurricane Sandy. So maybe they were trying to control that a little bit.
That's interesting. This one kind of, I think, was beyond their control. I don't know that they actually, you know, a lot of people think they engineer these things, but I'm kind of, you know, look at the sun prior to these hurricanes, and there was a massive solar flare about 4 or 5 days ago in the opposite hemisphere of the sun. So it kind of seems like that might have had something to do with the intensity of the storm as well as the full moon. So I just hope that everybody's okay, and at least that they get that nuclear power plant, that Oyster Creek power plant, under control, because that's all we need is another Fukushima.
That's right. I know. And this goes into Walter Russell's work, because he was against the power plants. Anyway, I read lessons 1 through 4 that you sent me, and his words were more like food that kind of gets you in a sweet, meditative, restful place. It was more like a message going soul to soul rather than body computer to body computer, if you know what I mean. So how about we begin with you telling us who Walter Russell was and how he received his information you're going to share with us?
Sure thing. Walter Russell was an American polymath and autodidactic who was a master horseman, master sculptorist, master artist, master musician, master philosopher, a master scientist. He had a degree conferred upon him, a doctorate degree in science. I believe it was around 1949 or so. All his life, he worked knowingly, as he called it, with the creator, with God, which he considered to be the universal one, which also happens to be the title of his first book. Just an interesting fellow in terms of his power to demonstrate his knowledge to the world.
I have to also insert here, he was also an ice skater. So he was a true Renaissance man.
So and a master horseman. You know, Walter Cronkite quoted of him when he passed away, or refolded, as the Russells used that term instead of death or dying, that Leonardo da Vinci of the 20th century had died. So they considered him to be up on that par as an artist.
And how did you discover him?
Ironically, I was in a used bookstore, and this was probably around 2005 or so, and I kicked the book, The Secret of Light. It was on a bottom shelf, and I picked it up, really didn't think too much of it. I kind of figured it was a Masonic book of some sort, so it was $2, and I bought it, and it sat on the shelf for a few years, and till later I got a interesting nudge out of the gate, if you will, kind of a suspicion to open it up and read it. And as soon as I read the first page or two, I was glued. And from that point, I've just basically consumed every single bit of this universal law, living philosophy, and natural science I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely want to focus on the more philosophical principles, but also I think we should briefly discuss his view on science. How are Walter's views of the universe different from, let's say, like quantum physics, the electric universe? There's the holographic universe, there's the morphogenetic field ideas. So how are his views different?
Well, his views, he basically, through his illumination, he was shown, which was a 39-day long illumination. That's where he gained the knowledge from the light of mind, as it's called in mystic circles, and you know, these experiences of mystics and illuminates having this flash of light. His happened to last 39 days, where he was pretty much out of his body the entire time. He wrote down some 40,000 words and hundreds of charts and drawings, and having never studied science at all in his life, or chemistry for that matter. I know his wife, Helen, at the time called the authorities. Two friends of his came over to evaluate him, and they saw his writings, and they basically advised her to let him be, that he was doing something that was out-Whitmaning Walt Whitman. So they advised her just to let him go on with his illumination, and fortunately for us, that's the case, because today anyone in that kind of state would probably immediately be thrown in a nut house. But basically what his science teaches is that this universe is a two-way continuous motion universe, as opposed to a one-way Catholic universe, which I got to stress the Catholic universe origin is the child of Monsignor Jesuit priest Georges Lemaître. And Lemaître, ironically, after he had stated his theory, Pope Pius XII referred to the new theory of the origin of the universe as a scientific validation of the Catholic faith. And Walter just could not imagine that a universe could not first build itself up into solidity before just tearing itself apart. Mm-hmm. So it was a discontinuous one-way heat-death exhalation-only universe, whereas all bodies in nature that we can experience and witness breathe in and out. And so he firmly disagreed with that, as well as disagreeing with Newton's law of gravity, which he said was only half right because Newton didn't explain how the apple got up in the air in the first place.
Right.
So it's just little things like that that in the science end of it got me really interested in wanting to put this information out there, because it does call into question some of the things we refer to as laws. And I think it's a little bit premature in man's world to call things laws until we really, really get a good dissection of what it is we're referring to.
Well, that's right. And you did a good job. You presented some videos on thesecretoflight.com that really shows detailed diagrams laying out his scientific theories, which is probably easier to understand looking at some diagrams versus talking about it on radio.
Certainly, yeah. I recommend anyone go there for a more thorough breakdown. But the philosophy, you know, is a beautiful part of it too. And just the natural science, you know, it's basically men like Victor Schauberger, who also saw the vortices in nature. Tesla had his flashes. And most of these great men, what they presented to the world was, you know, just a gifted view using nature as their background. And I think what that does for mankind is it gives him a little more clarity when you base it on something we can understand like nature, as opposed to theories that are kind of bizarre and out there that really are, you know, like string theory, for instance, is basically less than 0.1% of the entire human race can even understand string theory. And kind of got to be in the good old boys club to really understand the universe from that perspective. But it is interesting that most of the chairs of the major universities in science are held by string theorists.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh? So what would Walter say about parallel universes and multi-dimensions? Were those myths to him as well?
I would say so, because, I mean, what we're dealing with is three dimensions in this physical reality. And other dimensions, he referred to dimensions like being time and height and weight. And if you're talking about other dimensions in that aspect, I think he'd agree. But like dimensions where, you know, there's a parallel you happening, doing something different, I just don't really see that he would necessarily agree with something like that.
Yeah, I read a quote. He was saying, creating your universe in forms that reflect your nature, but working with God's assistance. So to me, this could mean that there are even multiple ways to interpret the universe. And maybe that's why we have so many different theories floating around.
That's correct. This one can be, what's interesting is he seemed to lay it out in such a way that it aligns perfectly with nature. So I tend myself not to necessarily think of what he delivered as a theory, more or less an actual working model of creation that we see. And I must clarify that his reference to God, and I know God is a very loaded term, but that's what they spoke in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
They would also refer to it as the creator. I think just right off the flip for the listeners, the word God, according to Russell, is sexless, stillness, and silence. And this is where the entire theory of the wave mechanics of Russellian science come from, is the unfolding of stillness into motion and then the return of motion to stillness. And basically this is what we see in all through nature, from the atom up to the galaxy.
That's right. He also referred to the electric wave universe as an electric record of God's thinking, basically.
That's correct. And he called his first book The Universal One, in respect to the one mind of which all of us are a part of.
Can you talk about his idea of understanding and being the cause in order to command the effects?
Well, sure. If it's a thought wave universe, which I tend to side with that, basically the two differences between mystic science, or the one difference between the science of the mystic and the science of the materialist, rests upon an assumption, where the materialist assumes that mind is an effect of matter, but generally the mystic throughout all the ages has known mind to be the cause of matter. So therein lies, I think, the fundamental difference in the way that mysticism works versus materialism. And if you can look at the universe, I guess what happens with thoughts is pretty much, if you need an experiment to see that thought is the creation or is the impetus for the creation of man's ideas, then simply remove any concepts that man's ever had and all of man's creations would disappear with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because any body that we make, whether it be a poem, a radio interview, a painting, a song, is first an idea in the mind. And so in like fashion, that's how the creator creates its universe. And what ideas are, the reason they're bulletproof is because they don't exist in this three-dimensional reality. What happens is we build bodies for our ideas. So these bodies are the representative pieces of our mind. And only as good as your body is built, whatever body that be, according to your idea, is how much time it'll last. So the better you build it, the more perfect it is, the more it has the rhythms of creation in it, the more it can inspire your fellow men. And Beethoven's a good example for that, is Moonlight Sonata, or various artists who are able, like Alex Gray, for instance, just able to transmit their knowing onto canvas or into composition. And the better and more in the light you were when you brought this idea to the forefront, the more potent it is and the more of an effect it has on the masses.
That's right, because then your formed body, if you will, it has a soul, as opposed to like a godless creation where it's just bankrupt and empty, kind of like top 40 music today, you know, or some
well,
bad Hollywood
movie.
Pretty
much anything coming from the music industry in Hollywood, I kind of look at it with a grain of salt. It's just unappealing and very uninspiring. It's de-inspiring, and I think it's meant to steal your energy and basically depolarize your body into a state of decay.
Mm-hmm. I also like, too, that he said to learn to work with God, you know, not having God work for us like so many religious people kind of, they look at Jesus or God as a sugar daddy, you know, or God is like,
exactly.
God is like the welfare state or something.
Instead of learning to do. That was his wife, Leo, who he married in 1947, I believe. And they co-wrote the home study course together, which is 12 units. And she also co-authored a book called God Will Work With You, But Not For You. And she was adamant that, you know, man has to balance his thinking with action. I mean, there's a lot of wishful thinkers. You can dream all day of being a great concert pianist, but if you don't woodshed and practice, it'll amount to nothing, no matter how strong your thoughts are about it.
That's right.
So that's kind of the idea and principle of, you know, unfolding your thoughts into a creation and then, you know, you have to balance your thinking with action in order to perfect the techniques of your creation. So
Walter talked about finding the zero of stillness and making it second nature. He even kind of gave tips for people who struggle with it. Can you talk a little bit about this zero of stillness?
Well, sure. We have concentration, and the opposite of concentration is decentration. It's a word, neologism he made up. He actually made up several words to and also changed the fundamental definitions of some of them. Decentration basically is zeroing your thoughts. There's a lot of talk in the New Age movement about raising your vibrations. What's funny about that is actually to get closer to the Creator, you have to lower your vibrations your thoughts and still your mind. And there's that famous saying, be still and know that I am God.
That's right.
I think what that really means is basically decentrating is sending your thoughts out into space, unwinding, you know, the wound up condition of concentration. You know, springs wind up, things heat and cool, but there's basically two polarities to everything, and are two different kinds of states of being. And we live in a very, it's a sexed universe. You know, male and female are the pairs of opposite creations that we have to deal with. And basically, Walter's idea of meditation was that you need to zero your thoughts, still your thoughts, still your mind. And at that point in decentration, when you become the zero or become still in your mind, that's where you can harness the great ideas. That's where you can formulate through that light of knowing within yourself. And in a waking state, he also talked about being able to wakingly meditate. So as he would be, you know, creating something, he said this in a writing somewhere, there are times his mind would start thinking about money or something or troubles with whatever, and he would open the door of his studio and let himself out and then slam the door and go back to work. Hmm. So let out that part of yourself that constantly nags in the back of your mind. Or, you know, it's hard to get control of that. Eckhart Tolle said you had to arrest your thoughts, and I think that's a good way of looking at it, you know, just finding that the ability to become still in your mind so that you can harness the power of mind idea.
That's right. And getting still, and so then you can get more in touch with the God consciousness, I guess.
Exactly.
And it seems like nowadays you have to really go out in the woods because there's electromagnetic frequencies. People are drinking too much coffee. It's loud. You know, there's a lot of astral energies flying around. So some people have to really go to a quiet place, you know.
Certainly. I think once you do it enough, though, I mean, I'm starting to notice in my own self an ability to kind of, you know, I think we do it a lot when we drive. If you drive a lot, it's almost like driving is secondary when you're actually imagining all these things that have nothing to do with driving. Your body just kind of automatically does what it needs to get where it needs to go. But it's sort of that ability to be wakingly meditative that you can carry this kind of thought process into your daily activities and make them much more enjoyable because you kind of have a more of a centered, balancing peace about the whole process of living.
That's right. It kind of makes you more psychic too. When I get in that kind of zone, I can go out and also do mundane things and it doesn't bother me as much. Kind of stay in a happier place. He also spoke about the importance of awakening your genius and listening to the inner voice. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, certainly. I guess the question we should ask is, what is it that separates a genius from an ordinary man? And I think what Walter noticed right off the bat was that genius never tires. Genius, it's always interested and generally is not ruined by school. Mm-hmm. So the greatest men in our world have a common thread, and that's nature. And in your realizations and your oneness with nature, your imaginings, your inspirations, the beauty that you see in the world, the knowledge that you possess within yourself is brought to the forefront. And the masters among us, the geniuses, men and women, are those who can create bodies of work that endure. And they endure because they have inspiration in them. And the inspiration can re-inspire millions upon millions of people. even sports figures can get into the zone. And like Michael Jordan had just a miraculous season back in the late 80s that you know, people talked about the zone. Well, I would say that the zone is a form of self-mastery of the body, even if it is from an athletic point of view. But there's the zone is sort of like a mini illumination. It's mastery of what you're doing in the moment. And what geniuses do is they are able to do this almost, you know, daily. They just have this mastery of life that is, for one thing, it's kind of scary to some folks. I think, you know, J.P. Morgan, when he decided not to fund Tesla after his idea of free power, was one of fear, you know, fear for his own bank account. Mm-hmm. His reaction basically to free energy was, you mean all I can make money on is these lousy antennas, Tesla? Mm-hmm. So we saw what should have been a wireless power generation system disappear 100 years ago. But basically what genius does is it outperforms all other men, and for a reason, because they're able to translate their ideas into bodies that have a higher amount of concentration in it, of pure thought and awareness and inspiration.
It's interesting you bring up school too, because school doesn't teach knowledge or inspiration. It's just repetition and regurgitation.
Yeah, like, remembering and repeating is not knowledge, you know, and that's how we grade the students the best. Those who remember and repeat the best get the highest grade. And so what you're doing is, and that's, you know, Charlotte Thompson Iserby wrote in her Dumbing Down of America that's kind of the direction that school was going, you know, that the curriculums were beginning to, you know, the loss of the trivium and quadrivium and just things of teaching, you know, ability to critically think and reason in our school systems is all but gone. So Russell said one of the two greatest things that ever happened to him was leaving school at an early age before it ruined him.
That's right. Well, he also was against technique, Walter was saying, because anyone can acquire that, but inspiration is something that you have to be awakened. You have to kind of work for it a bit. And when it's inspired, then you can put out amazing things versus technique just making kind of mediocre things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's pretty much understood that if you need to practice a technique like a pianist, or you need to practice your brush stroke in painting or whatever technique, that you can acquire techniques through the light of mind and save yourself some time. But if you need to, he was definitely against experimenting in science. He was so complete on his knowledge of universal function and natural law that I think he found it really strange and bizarre when he began to research science books after his illumination. He was quoted as saying, the language in which science spoke was so utterly complex, and it reminded him of, you know, these bizarre academic guesses, reminded him of the four elephants theory holding up the corners of the earth, that it was that archaic. So he had to learn the language of science from 1921 until about 1927, when he released his book to 1,000 prominent scientists around the world. And I think one of the only ones to respond to the book, The Universal One, was Nikola Tesla. And Nikola told him to lock it up in the Smithsonian for 1,000 years because mankind was not ready for this knowledge. And Leo came along later in his life in 1947 or so, and she told him that the world doesn't have 1,000 years, yeah, and we need to get this stuff out now and release it to the world. And if it wasn't for her, there'd be no, probably no mention of Walter Russell in the history books.
Oh, well, good lady.
Indeed.
So if we're all co-creators and part of God, isn't it also true that there might be some level of clashing creations, especially right now? I mean, I see a clash between the God forms with the godless forms. So how would Walter say to look at it?
Well, I think he would point out that there's a difference in views of a person who's mindful and aware of their creative side versus those who live in a materialistic, externalist kind of life. Unfortunately, at this time, materialistic science is king of the road, has been for 300 years. And at least to me, myself, science has gone down the wrong road by removing the creator from its creation. In other words, to remove the mind force as being causal has proved to be colossally damaging, in my opinion. And I think Russell, everything he did, he operated from a modality of being connected to source at all times. And he thought really along the lines that any man who is a genius, what he does different than other men is he demonstrates his mind power in his ability to create his creations. And what we're seeing today is an extremely materialistic society who is outwardly defined through the ego, culturally inept, because basically culture is now being handed to you from Hollywood, music industry, and the sports industry. And so a lot of people are really lost in the external world, don't have much of a connection to their inner selves. And I hear a lot of people all the time say, I wish I could do that, or I wish I could do this. Or I think that's really a fundamental difference in approaches to life. And that's what is probably responsible for this clash, because the materialists want to basically, you know, create this scientific technocracy, this through plutocracy, and basically control the rest of humanity as some sort of farm animal. Mm-hmm. Whereas genius has never been able to be controlled. So, you know, Russell often spoke that, you know, he would, some of his famous quotes, one of being, genius is self-bestowed, mediocrity is self-inflicted.
I love that one. I was actually going to read that in the end.
Yeah, it's sorry true. If I took away the
steam. No, no, it's an excellent one. I love that.
Oh, he's got so many. I could just go on and on.
Well, if nature doesn't allow for imbalance, maybe eventually all this mess and all these big power structures and ideas are going to crumble. I mean, it's about time.
Exactly, and that's what we're seeing. I mean, one thing that people have to understand is universal law cannot be trumped. The law of balance is irrevocable. It's inexorable, and there's no getting around it. And to the degree that man breaks universal laws, to the degree that he will be broken by it. And I think it's very humbling when I realized how universal law applied in my life. All the things I look back on my life and that I did wrong, I can say that destroyed me there, that cut me down there. My inawareness, my lack of being able to know that my choices have very real effects. Mm-hmm. And I think that man has been progressing for several thousand years without a true sense of responsibility. So, nature is the ultimate balancer of all man's actions, and she will set him right if he doesn't first do so himself.
And people always have this approach of, why did this happen to me? And they're looking at it a wrong way. It's like you have to dig a bit deeper and say, what is the lesson here? What is nature trying to tell me? What am I missing so it doesn't happen again, you know? So you can kind of get back straight on your path. Well, he also had a great summary for the law of equal giving for regiving. I really like that one. Can you get into that one?
Sure. Well, him and Leo realized early on that they each were, since their childhood, prepared to meet one another. He, when she called him on the phone after reading the book, The Man That Tapped the Secrets of the Universe by Glenn Clark, he answered the phone and said, I know your voice. I'll come to you at once. And as soon as they got together, they began to formulate plans. And he was a president of the Arts and Sciences Society in New York and started the Twilight Club through a grant from Andrew Carnegie. Ironically, a lot of the luminaries of the day attended this club, from Mark Twain to Ralph Waldo Emerson to Walt Whitman to just multitudes of genius men. And their whole purpose was to get together to create organizations that would uplift and build character in man, because as Edwin Markham and others who were attendees of this Twilight Club saw, that mankind was headed for a disaster and a total collapse of civilization if they didn't do something. So out of the Twilight Club came such things as the Lions Clubs, the Boy Scouts of America, the Better Business Bureau. You know, all these things that were designed initially to help instill character in men, integrity. And basically what we're seeing now is the warnings of all these people coming true, that there is a grave lack of integrity in our leaders. There's a grave lack of integrity in the hidden hand and the power structures of this world. And I think that's a sign of what happens when you lose touch with the inner light within you and become enamored by the external world and the desire for worldly things instead of the treasures of the soul. Equal giving for regiving. I was getting into that and I kind of went off on a tangent.
No worries.
There,
it's great. I love it.
The law of giving for equal regiving is based on nature's ways and processes. What Walter saw in nature was nature's ability to create abundance. And she had a beautiful rhythmic way of giving all life forms what they need and providing perpetual balance. And in mankind, we don't see balance. We see a lot of taking going on. And there's a lot of different authors who have written about it. For instance, Daniel Quinn wrote Ishmael, about a gorilla who would talk to this guy about how the takers are ruining the planet. And it's basically this taking mentality is the external man, which is coming to an end. And what external man is so good at is taking and creating an imbalance, which taking does not create the will or the inspiration to regive. It just creates the will to take more, taking and retaking, you could say, mm-hmm. to where we have an entire civilization who is materialistic, especially in the States here. I think that it's obvious when you see people on Black Friday lined up at a Walmart stomping each other to death to get to useless crap they don't even need. I mean, that's the peak example of materialism. And nature's law is giving for equal regiving. And I think when man lives that principle, he benefits and extends balance to his own surrounding, which I liken that to really being the change you seek. Because what Gandhi knew was that you can't use evil to defeat evil, or lest you become that which you're fighting. So the whole approach of the mystic is really to give to his fellow men his creations from within himself, and that uplifts humanity, and that's what gives civilization life. It's only when we take, you know, and we have this group of takers, this, you know, it's been called many things. I like to call it the Deluminati, because they have no light in them. But, you know, other people call it the 1% or whatever it is. It's certainly a sickness, and I think we're seeing it unravel before our eyes.
But isn't that kind of the law of the jungle? I mean, that's nature, but it's kind of it's brutal. And animals, they just take what they can, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, I don't think lions take all the gazelle out of the fields. They just take one, enough to sustain themselves. So in that, I would say there's a balanced action and reaction there. But what man does is he takes more than he can even use and hoards it and stuffs it into vaults. And, you know, like William Randolph Hearst, for instance, having held at one time 1/4 of the world's art, which wasn't even on display. I mean, what good is it, you know, if it's all in warehouses and crates? So, but yeah, the animal kingdom is a, to me, a measure of balance. I mean, it's, if we could learn to live more like nature, you know, and, you know, take life with you know, a sense of awareness, like when you take the life of an animal, or before you eat a hamburger, have a sense of awareness of what it is you're doing, so that you can kind of, you know, pay a little respect to the spirit that gave its life for us to, you know. It's just this rampant taking that has no regard for others is a chronic illness, and I think it's a part of psychopathy.
Yep.
And I know Michael Tesserian, I've heard him on Red Eye several times talk about that kind of, you know, lack of responsibility in man that allows him to become that kind of creature.
I think too, though, the majority of people, I don't know, do you think the majority of people would be that way, or is it just a small percentile that are just absolutely so greedy and hoarding and wasteful? Because most of the people I know and associate with are more respectful and don't hoard, you know, and they wouldn't even if they had $1 billion, you know.
Certainly, yeah, it is endemic. I mean, there's, you know, the original industrialists, most of them, you know, like Andrew Carnegie and others were not trying to control the world. I think they, you know, Ford was one of the men who said, give the workers good living conditions and good food and good neighborhoods, and they'll do better work for you. I think it's the children of these industrialists who pretty much have gone off the deep end with materialism because they were born with a silver spoon. They were handed everything, that, and they don't know the value of hard work. I think that stems back to Leo's God will work with you but not for you. I mean, when everything's handed to you and you don't have to work to get anything and you're just to assume control of somebody else's idea, be it your father's or whoever, then you just kind of fit right into that position and you become an extension of that idea. But, you know, do they have the same value system or the same morality? Is there more of a, because I was raised rich, you have a different kind of outlook on people? Yeah. So it's easy to get caught up in. I'm kind of glad I never was rich and that I don't have a lot of money, because I'd probably think like them. You know?
And then you hear some rich people that are, they have so much money, and you hear them talking the talk, like about, oh, well, free energy, or they're even getting involved in like alternative media and things, but they don't actually help fund certain things that could really make a difference while they have millions of dollars. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
What's the guy, the two and a half men guy, Charlie Sheen, you know, he's on Alex Jones and all that, and I just don't know what I can do. And it's like, well, you have millions of dollars and you can help like fund some energy device or something.
Yeah. I mean, certainly. And, you know, there's so much going on with, you know, I think what the beauty of the science in that respect to free energy is that when man starts thinking of his universe as a two-way motion continuous universe instead of a heat, death, dying universe, then he'll begin to understand nature more, because it's based on natural law. And as science is taught in universities now, the second law of thermodynamics forbids perpetual motion. And you can't break the law. So really, we're stuck in the university system teaching children and young adults about a dysfunctional science that's, once they learn and begin to believe that there's no chance for perpetual motion, then they kind of get locked in that sense-based reality of the world. But my question is, show me anything that isn't in perpetual motion. Mm-hmm. The entire universe is moving at enormous velocity, and it's all perpetual motion. It's just, when we learn to copy nature, the way nature uses energy, Victor Schauberger said of nature that she didn't need to blow things up in order to do her work. But yet man is the only creature in the world that explodes things in order to get work out of it. And I think that comes from this Big Bang kind of outlook on the universe.
Definitely.
And that's what explodemia is. It's a discontinuous one-way heat, death, dying, exhalation-only universe. Compliments of the Catholic Church. And I tend to think, you know, when I look at and have been researching into LeMaitre lately, that this may be a leap for some people, but to me, I believe LeMaitre was Einstein's handler. Hmm. And for a lot of reasons, because the dysfunctional theory taught by Einstein, you know, which is not even really likely, but to me, that's just becoming more and more obvious that there's a certain element that wants people to be locked into this false explosion-based use of energy. And what we need is a complete upheaval of the current theories that stand in all our universities. We need, you know, just for instance, take the opposites attract law that Colum put out there. Nothing could be further from the truth, because you take a bar magnet. If opposites attracted, then north and south would reside in the middle of the magnet, but they don't. They get as opposites repel. They get as far away from each other as they can. Hmm. So, I mean, these are just little questions that Walter raised that were like obvious to him, but the rest of us never really ever think of those things.
And this was a long time ago he was saying this.
Yeah, exactly. So he was commanded by the creation, or the creator, if you will, at least what it was to him, to write down these words, which would give man a true to nature understanding in science and understanding of his universe. So
I haven't read through all the lessons yet, but I caught a couple lines where he said God had a reason for limiting the senses of reality so we'd believe the simulation. Do you know what that reason was?
Well, I would think it's for the play. I mean, this is the drama of creation. And if we were to, have been created knowing everything, then there'd be no need for a play. So I guess it's just sort of the life drama must happen. And man goes through eons of consciousness unfolding. And so, eventually this may, if we can get through this stage of our crevolution, as I like to say, then perhaps we have a chance at building a world full of geniuses where we won't need armies and militaries.
So also, he talked about the dawn of the cosmic age and the seed of the cosmic man. What did this entail in his view?
Well, the cosmic age is the electric age. I mean, it's where man is learning that he's becoming co-creator with creation. And when we 100 years ago, we didn't have electricity. And so it ties in with what people at that time called the New Thought Movement, which was being led by the best among us in civilization, the great poets, the great writers, the great musicians. And it was a real chance and a real opportunity for man to enter into a new thought movement, a new thought age. What ended up happening, obviously, is the greed of man, the barbaristic jungle-like behaviors that we have carried with us for thousands of years, won the day. I mean, so the law of giving and regiving was violated. Mm. And ever since that violation, we've seen these wars. We've seen scarcity, manufactured scarcity. We have, just all these different things that troubles with society. And I like to often say that if we could have done the past 100 years the opposite of what we've been doing, in other words, funding the arts and, pulling the kids out of school who were staring out the window and going, what were you thinking of? Oh, you want to be an artist? Let's give you this and help you develop that skill. I mean, think of the different world we'd have.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, what we did was, we reverted basically through fear. We chose fear over love, and this is the kind of civilization that fear creates. And there are all too many willing to take the reins of this and lead it off the cliff. Only if we're going to turn it around, we have to disconnect from it and basically come at it all from a different angle. I mean, be no part of the world if you're in it, but we do have to deal with it. So I think if we offer our own creations and be the change we seek, then through that law of balance, we can extend that balance to our homes first, and then to our neighborhoods, and then, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I think we should also talk about the mind self versus the brain, because I know he mentioned the brain is, an electrical machine, basically a servant to the mind. Can you talk about that?
Certainly. Well, the brain has no more ability to, basically the brain has no intelligence in the sense that it utilizes to think with. Again, this is materialistic science that says thinking and knowing comes from the brain. Russell was decidedly against that. He considered knowing to be the omniscience of creation or the universal mind of the one. And this universal mind, in and of itself, is complete. And all of us are basically units in the universal mind. And we borrow all power from this stillness and return to it. And all of our creations come from mind. Mm-hmm. First, they're concepts, and then we build bodies for them, then they exist. Basically, materialistic science, probably biology and anatomy would seem to certainly say to the senses that, knowing comes from the brain. But in Russell's view, the brain is just a recorder of electric sensation. It has no more intelligence than a record player or a record does. But yet, your memories are stored there. Certain things you learn, sense-based acquisition of knowledge is all stored there. And that's the difference between knowing and thinking, is that you can know your universe that you live in if you try to understand it through the knowing mind of yourself. And that's basically the kingdom of heaven being within. And mm-hmm. those who realize that more than others can bring out greater and greater creations than people that don't realize that. So
Well, he talked about the body, you know, sensing things. It's almost like a washing machine. It senses when there's enough clothes in there and how much water needs to be filled up. I oftentimes wonder if the chakra system in our body is also part of a sensory body thing. So when people do yoga, for instance, they kind of get this high, but that it's not necessarily a spiritual high, but that it's more of a body high. What do you think about that?
Well, it all depends on centering. I mean, a lot of yoga is more for the, you know, unwinding the tensions of the body. It's good for the body to unwind tensions. And, you know, we are polarities. We are what we think. So if we're thinking in terms of depolarizing thoughts, like that's one of the reasons I don't, you know, listen to Alex Jones anymore, because it's just too depolarizing for me. And any kind of depolarized condition builds up toxicity in the body. So it's important to be polarized toward life instead of discharging and depolarizing toward death. So I think, you know, yoga is certainly one of the aspects that you can unwind the tensions of the body, but it's also, you know, there are different kinds of yoga. And a friend of mine, Daniel Alva, who's one of the narrators for some of our units, he's a yoga master, and he often talks about the spiritual side of yoga. So it does have benefits, I think, in both realms.
It's like keeping a clean machine.
Exactly, exactly. Good tune-up, oil change every once in a while, you know.
So if this physical experience is basically an extension of a thought form that's in a body, do you think eventually it's going to collapse?
Say that again?
If basically, let's say the physical body is kind of an extension of an idea, where a thought's made physical, where a form, do you think eventually it's going to collapse, this physical experience, and it's going to turn into something else?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously the body's, this is one of the reasons I kind of just take a frown on certain ideas like time travel or interplanetary travel, because the pressure conditions on any other planet are quite different than the pressure conditions here. I mean, you couldn't survive on Mars, I don't believe, any more than you could go to the bottom of the ocean without some sort of a system surrounding you to keep the pressure like it should be here. Russell's has stated before that if you were to take a giant machine and lasso Uranus and pull it to where the Earth is and then release it suddenly, it would zoom right back out to where it was, because that's its like pressure potential. And part of his science teaching was that pressure potentials determine where things end up. And that's why man's basically the whole misconception of the gravity theory was that what the apple sought in the Earth was like pressure potential, which is rest. Everything comes from a state of rest. Rest is the omnipresent condition of the universe. And basically what we see in solidity and form is a disturbance in rest. But all things that have form must eventually return to rest. And just for instance, if you throw a stone into a pond, eventually it will return to a state of rest. If you chime a bell and look at the waveform, it starts in stillness, vibrates for a while, and then returns to stillness. If you strike the E string on a guitar, it will vibrate from stillness and then return to stillness. So this is fundamental to understanding the Russellian science, and that everything begins from stillness and ends in stillness. I think that's kind of where he wanted to teach man that he had a different, you know, that there is actually something more happening than what our senses see. And that's the problem with the senses, is that the senses only pick up on things that vibrate. The senses cannot see stillness, and it can't hear silence. So if the Creator's abode is one of silence and stillness, then that certainly explains why science can't find it. And science means to know. It comes from the Latin scio, which means to know. And I would say that materialist science actually means to sense. Mm-hmm. So he saw a real difference between sensing and knowing in that connotation.
We're slaves to the senses right now, like the five sense prison David Icke talks about, huh?
Exactly. And, you know, I had read much of David Icke's work in 2004, 2005, around there. And I find that his interpretations of, you know, the 5 cents prison are dead on accurate, you know. And I think, you know, just the whole mind wave universe, the greatest men among us have all said this. It's not like it's one guy out of, you know, just, you know, it's a few people, maybe 30 people in the entire world have ever had a full illumination where they saw the reality of the universe. But I'd rather take their word for it than the word of a bunch of people that haven't, you know, because what they have to say seems to be more in line with reality being an illusion than that, you know, the other side, which is that we're just, you know, happened to be the result of primordial ooze that crawled out of a pond 8 billion years ago,
or something. The things people believe, you know, it's amazing. So what did Walter say about E.T., if anything? If he wasn't big
on... Him and Leo wrote in some correspondences, they thought that was one of the biggest hoaxes ever perpetrated on mankind. And, you know, I don't know exactly why they may have said that, but I know that she was against channeling, and she felt that really what people were doing was just making up, you know, names for their own inner mind, which, you know, I kind of agree with that, because, you know, if you're not used to your innermost self, basically, you know, what Walter would call walking and talking with God is the great realization of yourself as an extension of the one whole. And I think that's one way to define oneness much better than what we hear a lot of this new age, you know, kind of flaky, hokey pokey definitions of, you know, we're all going to turn into light beings and float away. I mean, I just don't buy that. I think that man is the result of a mind conception of universal mind itself, and that universal mind being God or the creator or the supreme being or the architect. You know, that it unfolds into male and female pairs, and it lives for a period of time and then rests from action. And that seems to be right in line with the way everything works in the universe.
Well, then in a way, we're always channeling information then, if we're all unified, right?
More or less. I think the difference between, again, this can go to genius and mediocrity. Genius interprets the rhythms of light within the mind to a greater degree than the average person does who's not even aware of it. So to the degree that you are aware of the genius within you and the divinity within you is to the degree that you can express that divinity to the rest of the world. And that's what separates a master from a common man.
Many of us have had dreams. I do all the time, of playing music or singing a song, and I'm like, oh, that is so good, you know, I'm gonna try and record it tomorrow, and then it doesn't happen. Walter said that there was actually a reason for that. Do you remember what that was?
I don't exactly. I just say that if you do get inspiration, it's best to act on it as soon as you can, because inspiration is a very fleeting thing, especially in the masses. The sense-based masses love flashing lights. They love to stimulate their senses. They love sporting events, the noise, the cheering. You know, that's what basically Walter would avoid all that. And generally, any sort of genius does. It doesn't really want anything to do with what the masses are doing. It's not – genius isn't interested in pleasing the senses. It's interested in expressing the light of mind, which you see in all the creations that geniuses have put out there. If they would have been at games and sporting events, they would have never created the kinds of things they have. But I think it's recognizing when to be alone. Yeah. And that's, you know, because what is inspiration? It's to be in the spirit, to be inspired. So going within, I like the N words, intuition, meaning are you into it? You know, inspiration, be in spirit. So the N words for me have become more meaningful over the years, especially since studying Walter and Leo's work.
As a musician, it would be difficult to try and capture the silence in a song. I think it's doable. I think it's possible, but it's hard to do. I mean, today, even nowadays, Henrik and I, when we watch certain movies or TV shows, the music's just, you know, going the whole time. And it's like, ah, you know, shut it up. The score, you know what I mean? It almost like hurts. It gets in the way.
But exactly.
But then you listen to something like X-Files, and it's kind of more just kind of subdued, and it's kind of a silent music, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, well, sometimes the space between the notes seems to have more importance. And that's just the, you know, the universal heartbeat is the 1-2 of creation. It's the beginning of music. And Walter, having been a musical master, you know, he depicted the universe as a series of 9 octaves. And basically the elements are octave locking positions of light. There's only one substance in the universe, and that's light. And what we call the elements are simply different pressure conditions of that one substance. And he drew an elemental chart that's just beautiful. It's a spiral chart. And actually, he was the father of the discovery of several of the transuranium series of elements that he was not given credit for, but did actually file the patents for them. So there are some provable things that, you know, were taken from him that came from this vision, you know, having not read a school book ever on science and dropped out, you know, at in sixth grade or so. So it's just amazing. I mean, there is something, too, that man can bring back from the silence into this motion picture universe and create these bodies of just incredible imaginings. And that seems to be the very powerful part of what geniuses do. And they just do it to a greater degree than the average guy who, instead of bringing forth simulations for his own ideas, he's working for somebody else's idea.
Yeah.
So I think you guys should applaud yourselves for having the ability to create what you guys have, because it's your own. It's not like, you know, you didn't have to take it as an extension from someone else. It's your own souls that you're putting out there, and it's authentic, and that's the difference too, is that people know when they see a cheap copy. They can feel the feeling of what a cheap copy's like. It's like a, you know, part 5 of Chucky or something. It's just, who has the desire to go that far with that, you know? Just, you know, the original is always the best.
Not everyone has it in them to be trendsetters or to be truly original. I don't know how that is or why that is. I don't know, maybe somewhere along the line, people that are more original, they worked at it in other reincarnations, if you will.
Certainly. And I think a lot of the problem with what you say right there, the reason people aren't, is because the systems that we're involved in. I mean, growing up in school, they're putting more kids on these, you know, imagination destroying drugs than ever. And that's a huge reason for the lack of creativity in society. And I think they're trying to corner the market on human imagination. And if they create a system where we take all our cues, we look at all the creations that are approved by the machine. You know, Hollywood's a perfect example. You know, it's rare that an inspirational movie comes out anymore. And I think you just have to dig for it. But there are those people out there who, you know, save for the system, have managed to escape it and are offering, you know, themselves back to the world. So I think we can build upon those things and inspire our fellow man, being the change we seek. Then we can certainly see a better civilization on the horizon.
That's right.
And as long as we believe the bull crap coming from the authoritarians, then, you know, there's always going to be that friction, I guess, until enough of us come together and can create enough of a movement toward being co-creators as well.
Yeah, raising the bar, because right now it's pretty low. in the name of equal,
exactly.
in the name of equality and fairness, you know, the human race is slowly falling down into the pit of despair.
Yeah, and Walter and Leia warned of that. You know, they said it takes 800, 900, 1,000 years to build up a civilization, but it only takes a few to destroy it, and that destruction comes from, you know, taking, basically, breaking the law of giving, which is the law of nature. You know, and it's just, a man does this to himself. He hurts himself and calls it sin, calls it evil. You know, Russell was adamantly against devils and any kind of hell or any of that stuff. He really thought and felt, as well as men of his time that he ran with, the luminaries, as I said, of that day, they felt that man was on the verge of, you know, self-destruction if something wasn't done soon. And unfortunately, the powers that be, I like to call them the powers that were, because they're just on their way out. I mean, this can't last. It's a violation of universal law, and it doesn't matter what they think about it. I mean, again, you know, the science that we have is, just to bring this in, if I may, I think it's an important point, but the whole idea of gravity being an inward pulling force was the reason why we have this flawed nuclear theory of the atom. And basically, the nuclear theory of the atom says that, you know, it's an inward pulling force that holds the nucleus together. Russell disagreed with that totally. Said that that compression, the cold compression of space, winds up the vacuity of space into solidity and then unwinds. And I think Buckminster Fuller called that centropy, was the uphill flow instead of just a downward hill flow. And so if that's true, if this motion universe is two-way, which Walter asserted that it was, especially through inspiration and his own knowing, then that means that everything from Newton that was built upon the law of gravity, the nuclear theory of the atom, quantum physics, all of it is wrong.
Mm.
And that, what does that say?
Mm.
Wow. Step yeah. back, everybody. Because yeah. that's a big, you know, that's a big deal.
Well, Henrik and I were just saying, I think it was yesterday, because we listened to so much material, check out so much material, then there's a point when you're like, I don't know anything anymore. You know, I don't know what's real anymore.
Oh, I know. I feel for you if you tried to cram any of this stuff in yesterday. It's like, you know, it's like taking a crash course in Chinese, because you literally, I had to unlearn, being an electrician by trade, I had to unlearn all the things I thought that were laws of nature that man supposedly discovered, just to find out through my own confirmation that what I had learned was wrong. And there's an excellent book, actually, that people can go check out. It's called The Case Against the Nuclear Atom, written by Dewey B. Larson. And he just demolishes and debunks the whole nuke atom theory. And, you know, again, the indoctrination is so strong. You know, when I was raised, I remember that movie, the Walt Disney's, you know, what was that called? The Nuclear Atom little cartoon, you know.
Mm.
So, you know, just the indoctrination of science is incredibly strong. I mean, it's, science is not free, as people want to, as much as they want to believe. It's like, no, please don't take my science away from me.
Yeah.
But there are absolutely incredible men who have put forth a very balanced science, which, you know, Walter Russell is one of those men, Victor Schauberger. You know, they knew that at the heart of all motion was these vortices. And Russell drew them as twin opposing vortices, which he considered to be the lights of creation, the red and blue light. Red being male, blue being female. And in our world, we're taught backwards that boys are blue and girls are pink or red. So I just found that interesting too. But there's so much to this, and it's such an in-depth science, and it really takes what needs to happen in order to get into studying it is, first you have to basically agree to unlearn everything that you know, and then just begin again.
And
it's difficult.
And keep doing it. It seems like I keep doing that every year since I
Indeed,
was a teenager.
Yeah. And that's, you know, part of being real. I think you have to step back from your understandings and
reassess
and things that you think you know, and then question the other side of it all. So.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anything else we should know and missed regarding Walter?
Well, there's a million things I could tell you, but I guess ultimately is that I personally think I'm very motivated and have a strong conviction to share this knowledge with people on their behalf. As far as what it has done for me personally, I'm a completely changed individual. I think the change came from basic realizations that in myself is this kingdom of heaven, which, having grown up at a young age, being indoctrinated into, you know, the Catholic religion and just certain modes of view, I always knew in my mind that there is this something more. And I think what Russell did for me personally was gave me a blueprint of how to unfold myself in a way that was just an absolute demonstration of the power within you. And in order to go within, you have to find the quiet solitude and peace of aloneness. You know, a lot of people are lonely, and then there's those who love being alone, because that's where you really garner the power to create those enduring bodies of work. You know, and I think that just the ability to express yourself through inspiration and utilize your inspiration instead of, you know, wasting it on going to the carnival or something. You know, people get inspired and they, oh, I'll go to Coney Island, buy a hot dog and ride the ride instead of, you know, I say get your art kit out and, as Terrence McKenna said, put your art pedal to the metal and see what you can come up with. And I think the more of us that do this and bring our true selves out to the forefront at a much needed time when humanity could absolutely use the inspiration, and the more that we can hopefully steer ourselves in a different direction instead of going off the cliff as it seems to be heading toward now. So
I agree. And sometimes you have to kick yourself on the butt and motivate yourself to start doing these things because
Absolutely.
We're being sprayed with chemtrails and poisoned with bad food and everything else.
Oh, isn't it insane? I mean, there's just so much happening. It's like, you know, wow. I just sometimes I wonder to myself if we're even going to make it out of this mess. But you know, I'm doing my part as best I can to try to better the world around me. And if enough of us do that, perhaps that will inspire enough people and legions of people to try to make this world a better place.
I agree. And so we should hold that mindset that it's going to go the other way and not back down.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Matt, for giving us some inspiration today.
Absolutely, Lana. I appreciate it. And what you guys are doing is tremendous, and I applaud you for your efforts. And it's just great to know there's other authentic people in the world who have a serious concern about the direction that we're all taking and who aren't afraid to do something about it.
That's right. Give us your websites and any other details.
Sure. TheSecretOfLight.com is the website that centers around Walter and Leo Russell and their collective work of some 30 books and the home study course and the teaching of universal law, natural science, and living philosophy. My personal website is mattpresti.com, mattpresti.com. And there you can find some interviews of my Exploration of Consciousness show that I did for a while, and also all my music for free on Players for whoever's interested. And as a backup site for Russellian Science and Victor Schauberger, you can visit feandft.com. That's my co-producer Robert O'Tay's website, and that's all about free energy and free thinking.
All right. And to our listeners, remember to find the silence. 5 minutes a day will take you a long way. Bye for now.
You can call it done. The fact is always true. tell us of a better way, a path of liberation from the same old same. I certainly hope I live to see that day. In fact, that is the very reason why I came. Moving up an octave in the cosmic mind, decided long ago to leave these lies behind. It's time now to grow so we can stop this fall. I know sun.